Mahabharata, Chapter 28, Kuvera Offended. At Bhajika Ashram, Yudhisthira suddenly noticed the appearances of fearful omens. A violent wind blew up, lashing sand and pebbles into the Pandavas' faces. Meteors fell from the sky, and the sun became obscured by darkness. The earth trembled, dust fell in showers, and explosions were heard in the sky. All around them the brothers could hear the shrieks of birds and beasts. Yudhisthira looked around. Where was Bhima? Had his brother gone off on some adventure? These omens obviously indicated that something powerful was occurring somewhere. Not seeing Bhima anywhere, Yudhisthira feared that he might be the cause of the portents. He spoke anxiously to his brothers. O invincible ones, arm yourselves. It seems that the time for us to display our prowess has arrived. Yudhisthira turned to Draupadi. Do you know where Bhima is? Is he intent on performing some terrible act? Or has he already achieved a tremendous feat? These omens clearly indicate battle. O hero, this morning I presented to you a golden lotus. I requested Bhima to fetch more of those flowers, and he left at once for the higher reaches of the mountain. Yudhisthira could immediately understand that Bhima had disturbed the celestials by attempting to take the lotuses from them. He went quickly to Ghatotchaka and said, O Sky Ranger, you are like a celestial in prowess and ability. We need your help. It seems my younger brother has gone upward to the regions of the gods. By his own power, Vayu's son can leap into the sky and come down at will. He moves with the speed of the wind and is left to find the celestial lotuses. Please carry us to the place where they grow, so that I may see what Bhima has done. Replying, so be it, Ghatotchaka and his followers carried the Pandavas, Draupadi, and the Brahmins to Sogandika. Ghatotchaka had already been there a number of times, and he knew the way well. As they descended to the ground near the lake, they saw Bhima standing on the shore holding his mace. At a distance, they saw the large-eyed Krodavasas watching him. A number of them lay on the ground and in the water with their hands and limbs smashed. Yudhisthira was shocked. He went over to Bhima, embraced him, and said, O son of Kunti, what have you done? Be blessed, but if you wish to do good to me, then you should never again be so rash as to offend the celestials. Seeing Yudhisthira there, the Yaksha guards folded their palms and bowed their heads in humility. The Pandava apologized for his brother's acts and consoled them with gentle words. Looking at the beauty of the region, Yudhisthira desired to remain there for some time with his brothers. He asked the guards to request Kuvera's permission for them to stay. Hearing that Pandu's sons had come, Kuvera was pleased and he gave his assent. Thus Yudhisthira and his party remained for some time on the high slopes of Gandamandana, enjoying the heavenly atmosphere. After a few days, Yudhisthira desired to see Kuvera. Sitting by the lakeside one morning, he told Bhima, O brother, we have seen all the holy places with Lomasha and the other Brahmins. Let us now see that most holy of places, Kuvera's abode, always frequented by siddhas and rishis. Can you think of some way by which we can enter the heavenly region? But as Yudhisthira finished speaking, a celestial voice resounded in the sky. O king, you will not be able to go to the inaccessible abode of Vaishravana by this way. Go back to Bhajika Ashram. From that place you will go to the hermitages of Vishraparva, and then to the hermitage of Arishtashena. From there you will see Kuvera's abode. As the divine voice spoke, a cool, fragrant breeze blew down a shower of flowers. Domya said, The order of the gods cannot be ignored. We should leave immediately. During the last few weeks before Arjuna's return, the Pandavas spent their time in the company of rishis, but Bhima often roved about the mountain with Ghatotchaka. One day, while the two heroes were absent, a powerful Rakshasa appeared at Bhajika Ashram. He had actually been there all along, having assumed the form of a Brahmin and living unrecognized by the brothers. He wanted to steal Draupadi. Seeing his chance, he manifested his monstrous form, grabbed Yudhisthira and the twins in one arm and Draupadi in the other. He also seized the Pandavas' weapons, and then he rushed into the forest. Sahadev managed to extricate himself and snatch his sword known as Kaushika. Then he chased the demon while calling loudly for Bhima. Yudhisthira reprimanded the Rakshasa. O fool, virtue decreases in you, and yet you care nothing. What good result do you hope to attain by your vile behavior? In this material world, the celestials, Pitris, Siddhas, animals, and even worms and ants depend upon men for life. Even your race depends upon men. Yudhisthira instructed the Rakshasa about the interdependence of all beings. By sacrifice and religious performances, mankind satisfied the gods and the Supreme Lord, who in turn supplied them and all creatures their necessities. If men suffered and were unable to practice religion, then everyone was affected. Yudhisthira warned, O wretch, as you have shown ingratitude for our having maintained you for so long, and as you are now trying to steal our wife, you will surely meet with destruction. The Rakshasa felt Yudhisthira becoming unbearably heavy. He was forced to slow his pace. Sahadev was then able to catch up to him. Yudhisthira called out, Don't be afraid of this Rakshasa, brother. I have checked his speed, and I sense that Bhima is not far away. Sahadev stood before the Rakshasa and said, Stay and fight. Only after killing me can you carry this lady away into the forest. Otherwise you will die. I am Pandu's son Sahadev, and I am here to punish you. As Sahadev brandished his sword, Bhima arrived, wielding his mace. Seeing his brothers and Draupadi in the Rakshasa's grip, he blazed with fury and roared, O sinful wretch, I have found you out long ago when I saw you scrutinizing our weapons. But as I apprehended no fear from you, and as you were disguised as a Brahmin, I took no action against you. He who kills such a person living as a guest, even if he knows him to be an enemy, goes to hell. Nor could you be killed before your time had arrived. Today you have touched the sinless Draupadi, and thus destroyed your life's duration. You have swallowed the hook fastened to the line of fate, and like the fish, will meet your destruction. Go now to where Hidimba and Baka have already gone. The Rakshasa became alarmed and let Draupadi and her husbands go. His lips trembled in anger as he rebuked Bhima. It is you who are sinful. I know of your having slain those Rakshasas. Today I will offer them oblations of your blood. Come and fight. I am waiting. Without saying more, Bhima rushed at the demon. Seeing him unarmed, he put down his mace and took hold of the Rakshasa with his bare hands. The demon met him like the Asura Vitra met Indra. As they fought in fury, the earth vibrated with their heavy steps. The twins came forward to help, but Bhima checked them. I am more than a match for this demon. By my religious merit, my sacrifices, and by my brothers, I swear that I shall kill this one today. The battle between man and Rakshasa raged. They tossed each other about and aimed terrific blows at one another. Their colliding fists sounded like thunderclaps. As they rolled about, locked in combat, they broke down gigantic trees. They then lifted those trees and fought with them. The air was filled with fragments of wood as the trees were smashed to pieces. When the entire area was denuded of trees, they fought with rocks and boulders. Without a moment's pause, the two fought intensely, each seeking the other's death. They appeared like a mountain and a mass of clouds coming together. As they hurled boulders at one another, it seemed as if meteors were falling from the heavens. Even though repeatedly struck on the head and body by the rocks, neither fighter flinched. They wrestled like a pair of infuriated elephants, gnashed their teeth, and roared. The dreadful fight lasted for almost 30 minutes. Finally, Bhima raised his fist, which resembled a five-hooded serpent, and dealt the Rakshasa a terrible blow on the neck. He fainted, and Bhima caught hold of him as he fell. He raised the Rakshasa up with his two mighty arms and dashed him to the ground. Bhima pounded his fallen foe into a lifeless lump of flesh. With his bare hands, he tore off the demon's head and threw it aside. That blood-smeared head with wide-open eyes and bitten lips rolled away like a huge jackfruit. Spattered with the demon's blood, Bhima came to Yudhisthira and bowed before him with folded hands. Yudhisthira and his brothers praised Bhima, even as the Maruts praise Indra in heaven. The brothers then returned to the ashram. It was almost 5 years since Arjuna had departed. Lomasha told the Pandavas that they could expect him to return shortly. He thus instructed them to go to a higher part of the mountain to meet him. Taking up their few possessions, and with Domya, Lomasha, and a handful of other Brahmins accompanying them, the Pandavas climbed to a high plateau on Gandamandana. As the celestial voice had predicted, they came to the ashrams of the royal sage Vrishaparva and the great rishi Arishtashena. Remaining with them for some time, the Pandavas received spiritual instructions from them. Arishtashena told them that it would not be possible for them to go further up the mountain. Above here lies the path to the higher planets. No man can go there unless he is entirely pure and sinless. Along that path you will find the gods' sporting ground. Even from here we can hear the sound of their kettle drums, tabors, and veenas. Aristasena told the brothers that he had been to the mountain's summit and seen the gods for himself. He had also seen the Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Kimpurushas, and other heavenly beings consorting with the Apsaras. The great lord of wealth, Kuvera, could often be seen there, being worshipped by the best of the Yakshas. At that time, this entire region resounds with the melodic chanting of the Samaveda. Daichas, Danavas, and Siddhas alike join in the worship of that illustrious Lokapala, Kuvera. The Rishi suggested that the brothers should reside peacefully at his ashram until Arjuna returned. Looking especially at Bhima, he said, "Do not be restless here. Rather live at ease. Be peaceful. The time will come soon enough for you to display your strength. Without doubt you will crush your enemies and govern the earth." Surveying the region, the Pandavas felt as if they had already gone to the heavenly planets. Every kind of tree was present, all of them blossoming and bending with the weight of ambrosial fruits. Sweetly singing birds played in the lush foliage, while peacocks, with their tails outspread, appeared like the tree's crowns. The lakes teemed with waterfowl and were adorned with lotuses, and the air rang with the hum of maddened bees who drank the nectar falling from the lotus cups. The brothers were fanned by a balmy breeze that carried celestial fragrances and fine drops of cooling spray. There were countless varieties of animals, all of them peaceful and harmless. One day, as the Pandavas and Draupadi were seated on the shore of a lake, they saw the great eagle Garuda descending toward its waters. The bird blazed with a golden effulgence. His huge wing beats created a wind that tossed the forest and sent showers of blossoms to the ground. Trees closest to the lake were crushed by the force of his descent, and the mountain trembled. He flew with the speed of the wind, and before the Pandavas' eyes carried away a mighty Naga serpent who lived in the lake. Having taken hold of the Naga in his talons, Garuda rose high into the sky above the mountain and disappeared into the distance. As the eagle went north, the wind from his wings blew many flowers from the mountaintop down to where the Pandavas sat. Seeing the celestial flowers of five colors, Draupadi said to Bhima, "O best of the Bharatas, See here the exquisite blossoms which have fallen from the mountain peaks. Surely they have come from Kuvera's abode. O hero, how I wish to see that heavenly place! But it is heavily guarded by Rakshasas, Yakshas, and other powerful beings. If only Arjuna were here. When Agni burned the Khandava, your invincible brother held at bay the entire host of gods with their celestial army. In this way, Draupadi playfully taunted Bhima. Bhima frowned as Draupadi went on. Surely you too are capable of standing against any foe, human or celestial. O Bhimasena, send all the Rakshasas fleeing to the 10 directions by the mere force of your arms. Let all of us approach this mountain peak without fear. I have cherished this thought in my mind for some time. Protected by your prowess, I long to see this mountaintop. Bhima looked like a wounded bull. He could not stand Draupadi's words. Without delay, he rose up, took his weapons, and made his way up the mountainside. Moving with the gait of a lion, that mighty man, as tall as a young sal tree, having a complexion of burnished gold, with broad shoulders and a neck like a conch shell, rushed with full force toward the sheer rock face which led to the mountain summit. Quickly, Bhima found a narrow passage by which he could scale the mountain, which was inaccessible to ordinary men. Grasping hold of creepers and crevices in the rocks, he climbed swiftly. As he reached the summit, he came to a vast plateau where he beheld Kuvera's abode. It was adorned with glowing golden and crystal buildings of celestial design. The heavenly mansions were surrounded by high golden walls encrusted with gems of every color. Bhima leaned on the end of his bow and gazed in wonder at the city. Ramparts and towers stood all around it, and it was graced by huge gates and rows of tall flagstaffs, their colorful pendants fluttering in the wind. In the gardens outside the city lay heaps of gems, and along its walls garlands were hung. The trees were beyond human imagination, and around them Bhima saw many beautiful apsaras dancing to the strains of heavenly music. The sight of Kuvera's opulence sorrowed Bhima, as he remembered the wealth Yudhisthira had once possessed. Then he again became angry as he remembered Duryodhan's crimes. He took out his conch shell and blew it with the full force of his lungs. The sound echoed around the mountain summit and struck terror into the hearts of all creatures. From the ramparts, the startled Yaksha and Rakshasa guards saw Bhima standing with his bow, sword, and mace. They swarmed out in the thousands and rushed him, shouting in anger. Their upraised clubs, maces, swords, javelins, spears, and axes seemed to blaze up as they advanced. Bhima shot numerous arrows at them, cutting off their weapons and striking down the Rakshasas who were on the ground and in the sky. The Yakshas hemmed Bhima in on all sides. He now appeared like the sun, enveloped by clouds. Without fear, he took out his sword and severed the arms, legs, and heads of his assailants. As he fought with the roaring Yakshas, he was drenched in showers of blood. Although they attacked him from every side, the celestial fighters did not see Bhima flinch or become discouraged. Mangled by his weapons, they fell back in fear, uttering frightful cries of distress. They dropped their weapons and fled in all directions. The commander of the Yaksha army, Maniman, addressed his fleeing troops angrily. How will you tell Vaishravana that a single man has routed vast numbers of Yakshas? The powerful Maniman, armed with darts, clubs, javelins, and maces, stood as firm as a mountain. His voice boomed out like a drum. O human, stay and fight. Having come to the Lord of Wealth's abode, you shall now be able to also see Yamaraja's abode. With a terrible yell, Maniman rushed Bhima, who instantly released three arrows, each of which pierced Maniman in the side. Maniman then hurled his mace at Bhima, and it flew toward him like a flash of lightning. Bhima fired arrows, which struck the mace with force, but were unable to stop it. Quickly, Bhima raised his own mace and smashed the Yaksha's mace as it fell toward him with the force of a thunderbolt. Seeing his mace broken, Maniman threw an iron club. As the golden-handed club shot through the air, it roared and sent forth bright orange flames and showers of sparks. Bhima moved aside, but the club caught him on the arm, wounding him severely. Maniman shouted triumphantly as Bhima fell back for a moment, but Bhima soon recovered and again raised his mace, the Shaika. He rushed at Maniman with a tremendous cry. The Yaksha hurled a huge dart, and it screamed through the air, glowing like the sun. Bhima whirled his mace and knocked the blazing dart away. Bhima then resolved to kill his adversary without further delay. He whirled the Shaika over his head and rushed toward the Yaksha. With a shout that reverberated around the mountain, Bhima hurled his mace at Maniman. It struck him full on the chest with a fearful crash and split his heart in two. The Yaksha fell to the ground like a palm tree flattened by a hurricane. Seeing their commander lying dead, their surviving Yakshas and Rakshasas fled. Bhima stood there on that mountain plateau, looking around for further attack. The sound of the battle had reached Yudhisthira. Hearing the mountain caves resound with loud war cries and other sounds, the Pandava and his brothers became anxious. They learned from Draupadi that Bhima had again gone up the mountain. Yudhisthira took the twins and quickly went after him. They ascended the mountain and came to the plateau where Bhima was standing. The Pandava looked like Indra after he had slain all the Danavas in battle. He was surrounded by the dead bodies of numerous Yakshas and Rakshasas. Many others lay on the ground, still moving, their limbs smashed by Bhima. Yudhisthira and the twins ran over to their brother and embraced him. The four Pandavas then sat down on the mountaintop. Looking around at the celestial region, Yudhisthira said reprovingly, "O son of Kunti, there is no excuse for your actions here. One should never offend the king or the gods. We are living in Kuvera's domain, and you have surely given him offense by your rashness. Such behavior is as unworthy of you as untruth is of the ascetics. If you have any regard for me, then do not commit such acts again." Bhima looked down in shame. It pained him to see his brother so upset. Yudhisthira pondered what to do. Kuvera was the powerful lord of the Yakshas and a universal guardian. If he had taken offense, then their position would be precarious indeed. They could not avoid the all-knowing God, and there was no question of facing him in battle. Better that they try to pacify him in some way. No doubt he would make his appearance to survey the damage. The four Pandavas sat in silence, looking themselves like gods descended to the mountain summit. In the meantime, the defeated Yaksha and Rakshasa soldiers had run to Kuvera and informed him of what had happened. Hearing that his commander and friend Maniman had been killed, along with numerous other fighters, the god became angry. He then ordered his attendants to yoke his chariot. Kuvera's servants immediately fetched his chariot, drawn by 100 horses, the color of dark clouds, each adorned with golden garlands and gems. The horses neighed loudly and moved their heads upwards as the divine Kuvera ascended the chariot, eulogized by Gandharvas and Charanas. 1,000 principal Yakshas, looking like so many mountains, wearing golden armor and equipped with weapons, followed Kuvera as his chariot moved off through the skies. The celestial chariot seemed to swallow up the atmosphere and draw down the sky as it ranged across the firmament. As he traveled, the Lord of Wealth pondered Bhima's second assault on the celestials. How dare this human act so insolently toward the gods? But Bhima, of course, was no ordinary human. He was Yudhisthira's brother, and Yudhisthira was Dharmaraj himself. He and his brothers had all taken birth only to fulfill the god's purpose. Kuvera then recalled a curse uttered long ago by the powerful rishi Agastya. Of course, how else could the mighty Maniman have been killed? Bhima had become the instrument of Agastya's imprecation. Kuvera's frown changed to a smile as he approached the summit where the Pandavas were seated. The Pandavas saw the celestial chariot approach. Their hair stood on end, and they rose quickly with folded palms to meet Kuvera. The chariot stayed in the air near the Pandavas, who stood looking apprehensively upward. The Yakshas who accompanied Kuvera alighted on the mountain summit like so many great birds. Seeing the brothers looking across at him with reverence, Kuvera was pleased. The Yaksha warriors saw Kuvera's mood and stood with indifference, their weapons lowered. The four brothers approached Kuvera and bowed before him. Thousands of Rakshasas, with huge bodily structures and ears like javelins, then approached and surrounded Kuvera. Kuvera appeared like a fresh youth. He wore a chaplet and garlands of celestial flowers. In his hands he held a noose and a sword. A large bow hung over his shoulder. Bhima, still clutching his mace, gazed at him without fear. Kuvera smiled at him, and then he turned to Yudhisthira and said, "O Partha, we are well aware that you are always thinking of the welfare of all creatures. Therefore dwell on this mountain peak without fear. Nor should you be angry toward Bhimasena. His killing of the Yakshas and Rakshasas has been ordained by destiny. Indeed, realizing this, I have become pleased with Bhima, rather than angry." Kuvera looked at Bhima and said with a smile, "O child, O best of the Kurus, I am not angry with you. Put down your weapons. For Draupadi's pleasure you have acted rashly and disregarded the gods, relying only on the strength of your arms. Nevertheless, I am pleased with you. Today you have delivered me from Agastya's terrible curse. That you should insult me in this way was foreordained. I therefore attach no blame to you." Yudhisthira's curiosity was aroused, and he asked Kuvera to explain the curse. "I am surprised that having angered the glorious Agastya, you were not immediately burned to ashes." Kuvera told Yudhisthira how he had once been traveling through the skies toward Kushavati, where an assembly of gods was to take place. Hundreds of thousands of Yakshas accompanied him, headed by Maniman. As they crossed the Yamuna River, they saw the effulgent Agastya sitting on its banks practicing asceticism. Out of sheer arrogance and foolishness, Maniman spat on his head. Kuvera immediately went before the rishi to apologize, but Agastya was burning with anger and uttered a curse. "Since this evil-minded one has insulted me in your presence, he will meet with his end, along with his forces, at the hands of a man. You shall be grieved by this, but you will be absolved of the sin when you see that man." Kuvera said that having seen Bhima, he knew he was now free from Agastya's curse. He invited Yudhisthira to remain for some days in his abode on the mountain summit, and he gave the Pandavas news of Arjuna in heaven, saying that he would soon be returning. Turning again to Bhima, he said, "O Yudhisthira, you should ensure that this brother of yours does not give way to rashness too often. If you do not check his impetuosity, it will sooner or later bring you trouble." Bhima lowered his weapons and bowed before Kuvera, who then blessed him. "May you destroy the pride of your enemies and enhance the joy of your friends." Kuvera took his leave from the Pandavas as his chariot carried him high into the sky. His Yaksha and Rakshasa attendants followed him, some flying and others riding conveyances covered with finely embroidered cushions and adorned with gems. The bodies of the warriors Bhima had slain were removed, and the five brothers stayed on the mountaintop, served and honored by the Yakshas.